calling for an organizing meeting here the 29th, just at least to begin the process of sleeping bans statewide. You know, people like Mike Rotkin and Mike Feinstein and
Jerry Brown,
people that should be our allies, are stuck with the quandary that, you know, this is a statewide and a global, national, and statewide problem. Well, if it's a statewide problem, then let's have a statewide meeting.
So, do you want to tell us, have you received any responses as in your...
I have a few people that said they're willing to, participate, but I would like to hear more, and, you know, I'm kind of sort of counting on you, Robert, to get me electronically linked with the people that could participate in an organized meeting. And it doesn't have to be the 29th. It seems since we're doing our sleep fast, that would be a good symbolic day to do it. But, symbolism doesn't have to be what rules us.
Mm-hmm.
We just need to have some organizing meetings so that by the end of July, perhaps we can have a statewide sleeping ban meeting to get people that are concerned about their community being overrun if they were to do away with these laws, and find out whose solutions have worked, try to get models of successful solutions.
Like Eugene, Oregon.
Oregon is a model for a successful solution, but I don't know if it's a model for people who don't have automobiles. I mean, currently don't have an automobile. If I was to become homeless, the Eugene, Oregon solution would not work for me.
Right. No. Well, Santa Barbara had a solution in 1986 where they allowed people to sleep on public property, provided they weren't camping, if you sleep as long as you don't stay warm. An unusual solution, but actually one that I bring up frequently in public debates because people like Mike Rotkin, who is the swing vote on this issue here in Santa Cruz in our city council, has claimed that no city in America would ever allow sleeping. And of course they do. Fort Lauderdale and Miami both have tent cities situated within blocks of their own city hall. So he doesn't know that he's either ignorant or lying about these issues. And
I choose to say he's lying because I know he's not ignorant of the issues.
I have to kind of agree with that.
And he lies within the context, of making a point. And so I think he just gets himself stuck in these little niches. And he needs to take an enema. Drink lots of fruit juices. Come to peace with himself. And realize that the days of the patriarchs in this town are over.
Well, that would be...
including you, Robert.
everyone but me, I would have to say.
the war of the patriarch between Mike Rockin and Robert Norris is not going to settle this issue. And you've come to accept that.
I think we're going to have a snoozing debate, a snoozing contest. And whoever snoozes, we'll leave that aside.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hoping that I can get you to take a quick look on the Internet and see if you can see what's coming up on the City Council and call me back because my show has been extended until 2 o'clock.
Well, let me try one more time.
I'll get back to some other callers.
Okay.
And play some more interviews, and we will hope to hear from you, David Silva.
Do not sleep the night of the 29th between 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That was David Silva. I'm Robert Norris. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz. It's about 1:30 in Santa Cruz, and my show would normally be coming to an end, but we have an extra half hour compliments of our next talk show host, Reckless. So stay tuned to 96.3 and call in to 96.3 if anything that we have been saying interests you. We're at 423-5361. 423-5361. The airwaves are your airwaves, at least as long as we can stay on the air. You can speak on our mic, and you can say what you need to say to the community. Now, before we left, we had an interview. We were concluding with Carol Denny. Actually, I think we reached the point where we did conclude it. She's a Berkeley activist talking about her own struggles with the University of California and at People's Park and trying to maintain that as a public space where homeless people and the community generally can come and go. Before we hear our next interview from Keith McHenry, who is sort of a familiar voice on my show, he's an activist with various groups, Food Not Bombs, one of them. I've been concerned about Leonard Peltier, and he's a political prisoner currently being held. Let's hear a little music to kind of break this up. A little music from Carol Denny, a song that I frequently play on the show, but perhaps don't play enough.
This town puts up decorations right around holiday time, then hands out lots of citations to people who ask for a dime. You cannot sit on the sidewalk, you cannot lean on the wall, you cannot stand in a doorway, you cannot be here at all. This town gets ready for Christmas by sweeping the streets of the poor. Jesus would think it was something.
About San Francisco, the battle to, what is it, to end the give a hand up, not a handout, slap of the hand to the homeless over in the Castro?
Well, that one seems to be going along with the weekly demonstration, the Hot Cookie, and...
Hot Cookie, to let our listeners know, is... is it a local is a business in the Castro that sort of initiated this plan to discourage panhandling and homeless hanging around by telling people to give money to organized charities but not to homeless people?
Right, yeah. They put up those typical signs that you see all over the world now, actually, in cities wherever I've gone, where they say, you know, don't give money to panhandlers, it only encourages them, and then instead you should be giving your money to the local charities. And in this case, though, I think some interesting things are going on with the local charities. For instance, there was recently a Sunshine Ordinance passed in the last couple of days, actually it's become law, and so such groups as Salvation Army have gotten out of the homeless feeding business because they don't want anything to do with having to allow public comment at their twice annual meeting. So they've...
Isn't there also something to do with domestic partner of gays in San Francisco that...
I think that's another aspect of why the Salvation Army is reducing its participation in providing services. I think this is fascinating. Isn't it the Salvation Army for many years was actively organizing against Funa bombs, and in fact started organizing against Funa bombs in behalf of themselves and in coordination with the police as early as 1988. And the general of the Salvation Army in San Francisco, that, for instance, was quoted in the newspapers as saying that Funa bombs was the leadership necessary for the insurrection of the poor. And
were they saying that in a positive way or a negative way?
Well, they were saying it in a negative way. Of course, we were very excited about that, and I have published that repeatedly since then.
I see.
So, but now, so that's been really funny. Now, the other thing that the Salvation Army did was that they had this program where they would give doctors to the San Francisco police and have the San Francisco police show up at the Funa bombs table in their patrol car and tell all the people coming to eat that they will either get a voucher and be allowed to participate in the lottery for one of the 25 floor spaces at the Salvation Army shelter, or they could eat with Funa bombs, but they could not do both. That was a long-standing program that happened for many years at, and the Salvation Army always seemed to could never lead me to the people who had organized that program, and just always seemed to be totally dumbfounded as to how this could be happening, but it did happen every night.
Now, this, of course, was back in the times when Funa bombs was actually under assault from Mayors Agnos and Jordan, and then, I guess, briefly under Mayor Brown. And that hasn't happened recently, right?
No, they've stopped showing up altogether. Now, the only thing the Salvation Army had done since Brown was in office was show up. They had this huge van that they bring, and they park right in front of our table so that you can't get to our table, and they hand out cup of noodle soup. And their 35-page full-color brochure on how God can save you. And that's basically all they've done, and they just do this for 1 week before Christmas. And they are the largest single recipient of city money for homeless services in San Francisco.
Interesting. How much do they get, you know?
Well, the last time I saw them get given a grant, they were given something like, big announcement they made was like $235,000 they were given as a, but they've been given at times as much as $1 million, $2 million of city money.
Now, sort of a historical note, Funa bombs came to San Francisco in 1987, and from, you know, you've been doing work in Cambridge and Boston and other places, I guess mainly Cambridge and Boston, right?
Well, I mean, I initially helped found the original group in Cambridge and Boston in 1980. And then I helped found the second group in San Francisco in 1987, and then since then I've gone around and visited many Funa bombs groups.
But the historical note I wanted to bring up was the point that there was a previous organization that was distributing food in Civic Center Plaza prior to the arrival of Funa bombs in 1987. That was the very famous woman, Mother Teresa, was involved there, was she not?
Right, Mother Teresa was... her group, the Sisters of Charity, were handing out food there, and then they left as part of a
deal with Mayor Feinstein, correct?
No, they were forced out of Civic Center Plaza by Art Agnos.
Oh, they were, okay.
Yeah, and that when they moved to the firehouse at Third and Third,
which is like 20 or 30. Long, long blocks away, right?
Right. It was out, and in fact, as it turned out, unfortunately, the press accounts made it look like they were donating this, and they got this firehouse for themselves. In reality, the Fireman's Toy Fund had been using that for years for their toys, not their fire trucks.
It was really an attempt to get them out of the eye of the public and actually away from where most homeless people were, right?
Correct. And it was a very handy thing. They one of the very few times that Mother Teresa came to San Francisco and publicly spoke was at the our diagnosis big press conference talking about how nice these charities were, because after all, Mother Teresa was agreeing to move to this area where the Southern Pacific Railroad abandoned yard was. In fact, they will probably be forced out of this area in the year 2000 when the Pac Bell Stadium finally is up and running.
So Food Not Bombs, the organization you've been concerned about, I guess you haven't been doing too much cooking for them recently, but...
Oh, the San Francisco group, I haven't cooked for, since the... Well, I couldn't cook in April and May, and then I was illegal during those...
April and May, you were illegal?
Yeah, so, I mean, I was...
Oh, because
like,
your vehicle was not...
My vehicle was illegal on site.
Right. We know that you've been of course, one of the most notorious, if not the most notorious, food felon of them all, present company included. However, you have been concerned that Food Not Bombs have kind of been adopting a less upfront political stance in terms of its message, which is has been some of us have construed to be an exposure of the poverty, hypocrisy, and futility of the national priorities of bombs, not food. Food Not Bombs taking the opposite tack, and also its mission of essentially serving homeless people in public places so that the community can see what's really happening in the community in terms of the non-existent social services. And I guess also with an eye to giving people a chance to show they can organize among themselves and make changes without waiting for governments or fancy non-profit organizations to take a hand.
Yeah, today, unfortunately, in San Francisco, there was a policy instituted in 94, maybe 95, where there was, when it was decided to serve in the evenings only and not serve in the daytime. And as also, and the issue of handing out literature and having a banner and information was generally abandoned. It's not, there are still some people who do bring the banner and some literature out on a couple of days a week, most notably on Monday. And
that's when the Food Not Bombs in San Francisco serves in the Haight, at Haight and Stanyan, right?
Yeah, well, that's the Haight and Stanyan. They also do it at UN Plaza. They will have on Mondays the volunteer house put out on
Monday. And then, of course, you serve in the evenings at 6 o'clock or is it 6?
About 7:30 now.
Really, 7:30 at what, UN Plaza?
At UN Plaza, yeah.
Downtown. Now, the point I was making, though, was that you've been concerned about the things you're telling me, but now I hear Food Not Bombs, at least, is beginning to initiate some support for this protest up at, what is it, Hot Cookie against the Let Them Eat Little Pieces of Paper?
No, they started this little project up there. I don't know. All I know is that I do get irate calls on my 800 number about that project from people who are very angry at ACT UP and Not Bombs doing this project, but I'm not totally familiar with exactly when they are doing it.
But it is getting done, so Food Not Bombs may be, should we say, taking a more high-profile role in defending the rights of poor people than it has in the last year or two?
Yeah, this is like the newest thing, and I think this could potentially be a really good new trend that they're starting to...
Do they do this with the Coalition on Homelessness and other groups? So.
Well, I don't think the Coalition is involved in this project. This is just merely an ACT UP Food Not Bombs once-a-week ticket that is occurring at, at this location, at the front of the Hot Cookie, which is 18th and, or actually Market and Castro.
Any reports on... what's been happening with homeless people in terms of the sleeping ban in San Francisco, which is also actually an eating ban? San Francisco has a strange law, but it has camping laws in the parks, and I'm not quite sure what ordinance they have. A lodging ordinance, they can use a state lodging ordinance they used to use back in the very early 90s against homeless people sleeping. Here in Santa Cruz, of course, we've been fighting our own anti-homeless sleeping ban between 11 at night and 8:30 in the morning, and our latest attempt to put it on the initiative on the ballot has fallen short, and we are nonetheless kind of planning to kind of pull together a summit from different cities. At least that's the hope of some organizers, starting with a kind of a local summit on June 29th and a Don't Sleep Tonight night, where people even in their own homes declare they will not sleep in solidarity with homeless people for at least that night, or if they can't do that, they'll throw off the covers, because in Santa Cruz we have a law that makes it illegal to cover up with a blanket outside after 11 o'clock at night. What's happening in San Francisco around those laws? Is there and policies? We know that Jordan's arrest them for sleeping matrix policies were actually intensified, doubled in intensity, more than doubled in intensity by Mayor Brown. Has that let up? Is it continuing? What's the story?
No, his crackdown, which is business as usual now, is definitely continuing. And the newest thing that I think is on the horizon will be a very intense crackdown in the Haight-Ashbury neighborhood.
There's been some mention of that in newspaper stories.
Yeah, there's definitely, you can see that Garcia, the columnist for the, the Examiner, I guess, is...
Ken Garcia is a Chronicle.
The Chronicle, rather, yeah. And then I think we're seeing Rachel Gordon start her little stuff about increased crime and the hate. And there's actually an interesting twist to all this, too. For instance, I was at Powell and Market Friday night, and there was this group of white supremacists that were harassing some Mexican friends of mine. And this is, I think what's happened is war is now in San Francisco, where they periodically, white Aryan resistance periodically makes trips into San Francisco for a few weeks and harasses people of color, and they had like some beatings of some people of color in, I think both African-American people and some other people in, basically people from, I think foreign tourists actually, in the Haight-Ashbury neighborhood. Some pretty, very, very tough violence there. And Ward, like I say, Ward does this periodically, goes to the city and terrorizes people, and then they split and I suppose move to some other city to terrorize some other poor innocent people. And instead of focusing on how this hate crime is occurring against the poor people living in the Haight-Ashbury, it's become like a new rallying point, or just another rallying point, just to, well, if we get rid of all these homeless people, then this white supremacist group wouldn't be in the neighborhood attacking homeless people.
But if we get rid of the Jews, we don't have to worry about the Nazis.
Yeah, so it's like a very strange twist. So, and maybe not so strange, but it certainly is the way that the mainstream media is portraying it. So you can tell it's these waves that keep happening, where you have the few newspaper articles, and then soon we should be getting like KGO radio and TV running some stories about the horribleness of the hate, and that's usually comes a few weeks before the actual crackdown in the hate, and then we'll see like some even, you know, there's already like a lot of police activity in the Haight-Ashbury as it is, and at times you wonder if every third person is in a plainclothes cop in Haight Street, but before there will be like this, probably this is the pre-July 4th weekend attack, because of course tourism will increase in the in San Francisco, and in particular in the Haight-Ashbury neighborhood on July 4th weekend, as the elementary schools around the United States let out, and the big tourist dollars will be coming here, and then so they need to drive the poor people out of the neighborhood.
Any word on the vehicular residents community that the Coalition on Homelessness was trying to set up, where a safe spot for vans to park with families and so forth?
I think that disappeared, and largely that's disappearing because the neighborhood where that was supposed to be, China Basin, is very quickly gentrifying. It's becoming quite the new place, with all kinds of little shops for people to shop in, and little cafes, and lots of condominiums and so on.
Cafe latte for anyone who can afford it, eh?
Yeah, it's the new up-and-coming neighborhood. So as a direct result of that, I think that project has collapsed, and that would be my impression, because I hang around in that part of town somewhat, and travel along 3rd Street quite often, and and I don't see any vehicular residents hanging out much around there. I think there is a little bit of the Petura district. The Petura district commission controls that neighborhood.
I understand Liberation Radio has gone off the air in San Francisco.
Yeah, San Francisco Liberation Radio went off the air the next day after the
injunction by Claudia Wilkins.
Yeah, by Claudia Wilkins against Free Radio Berkeley.
And that was Keith McHenry, a longtime anti-poverty activist, well-known Food Not Bombs worker, and a general gadfly ne'er-do-well and public-spirited spirit, who frequently appears on Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is what you're listening to right now, 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, on your dial. We keep broadcasting as long as the FCC keeps its distance. We got an incoming call. Let's see who's on the line.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Well, Uncle Robert, I haven't been able to receive the City Council agenda yet, but it is somewhere electronically en route to me.
Okay, well, let's keep hoping.
Huh? Well, all I could say is I encourage people to, you know, attend these City Council meetings. The afternoon sessions is when consent agendas transfer hundreds of thousands of dollars to projects that, you know, always should be questioned, and the manner of not going out to bid should be questioned. There's a lot of things that environmental people and people that are just wondering where the resources are going should question. And also, it doesn't hurt to watch, after everybody leaves complaining early part of the evening, it doesn't hurt to turn in your TV and watch all the voting they do between 10 and 1 o'clock in the morning.
That's on channel
72. Yeah.
Thank you, David, and
sure.
Get back to us if you get that council agenda in time.
Yeah, I'll try. I'll keep trying.
Okay.
Bye.
That, of course, was David Silva. And if you want to find out what's going on at the City Council, you don't have to wait until the actual council meeting at the public library right across from the City Council downtown. You can go down there today. It's open, I believe, between 1 and 5. And you can read the agenda, or you can go down tomorrow when the library hours are longer. You can listen, or you can read that agenda as well. And then you can go down there on Tuesday when the last City Council meeting until second week in August will be happening. That's at 3:30 and at 7, and David Silva has put out a call for anyone who wishes to talk about why she or he intends to sleep not on the 29th, to remain awake in solidarity with the homeless people on Don't Sleep Night or Sleep Fast Night or No Snoozing Night, whatever you will. You can come down to City Council on Tuesday and talk about that at 7 o'clock. In the meantime, however, we have a little comic break here, a little something to listen to after all this heavy stuff from the new Jolly Roger comedy troupe. Compliments of Radio Berkeley, Free Radio Berkeley, and San Francisco Liberation Radio. And again, one of the actors on this is the very versatile Carol Denny.
Everybody, this investigation will now come to order. New York Mayor Rudolph Giuliani insists on a full investigation of this alleged drunken cop rampage through the Hyatt Regency.
But it wasn't just the Hyatt Regency, Your Honor.
I'm not anybody's honor. And who the hell are you, lass?
If you please, sir, I'm Emily Vetter, the president of the Hotel Association, and I just wanted on the record that it was the Quality Hotel, the Bellevue, and the Hyatt Regency.
All right. We'll get to you in a minute. Now, who brought this complaint?
I did. Paul Delaney, manager of the Bellevue Hotel, Your Honor.
I'm not Your Honor. And what do you complain about, Delaney?
Well, about 50 New York police officers in town for National Police Memorial Day trashed the whole hotel, running naked up and down the halls, grabbing women, shooting off guns, pulling the fire alarms, and we called the Washington police, and they just stood there and did nothing.
Are you impugning the character of our boys in blue?
Well, no, Your Honor.
I'm not Your Honor, and you'd better not slander our fine local police force. Now then, you have some problem with the visiting police officers from New York City?
Well, I...
Well, then pick them out of the lineup here. Come in, boys, come in. That's right. Just crowd around Mr. Delaney. That's right. Get up good and close to him. Let him look at you. Get a good look. Now then, Mr. Delaney, you see anybody familiar?
Could you ask this guy to stop twisting my arm?
I'm just being friendly, that's all.
Does anybody look familiar to you?
No! Not at all! Nobody looks at these bits, man.
He's fantastic.
Go, boys.
Thanks for not breaking my arm.
And you there, Miss
Emily Vedder, Your Honor?
I'm not Your Honor! Now then, do any of these officers look familiar to you?
You mean these officers who are now pointing their weapons right at my head?
Yes, do any of these officers look familiar to you?
No! Of course not! I've never seen them before in my life!
Fine. Well, then, that's just fine. Moving right along, then. Investigators, do you have anything to report?
Well, it's the strangest thing. Apparently, there's not a soul in the whole town who can identify any of the dozens of officers involved in what was clearly a 3-day drunken rampage.
That's right. Nobody can quite remember their faces or badges, and as soon as we take photographs of the incidents into police custody, the photographs just seem to disappear.
Just like last year. Well, that means we have no witnesses, right, boys?
That's right.
Well, I did my best, but without the cooperation of witnesses, well, I guess you boys are free to leave.
Woo! Yeah, right.
And I'm terribly sorry for the damage to the hotel, folks. But wouldn't you want? You wouldn't want us to blame the wrong people now, would you?
But you have to do something. Our hotel has been torn to pieces, and we had to refund most of our customers' money.
Those cops did just almost $50,000 worth of damage to our hotel. Why, they're just a bunch of jackbooted thugs.
Shut up! Or I'll have you arrested for slander.
Oh, okay, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Certainly.
I'm not Your Honor. Now get out of here, you two.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes.
Sorry, Your Honor. It won't happen again.
Well, I guess this investigation is closed, right, investigators?
Looks like it.
I guess we did the best we could.
Strange. We had the same trouble last year's investigation, didn't we, boys?
We sure did.
Isn't that a coincidence?
I guess it's just the way the wheels of justice crumble, eh, boys?
Turn, I think you mean. The way the wheels of justice turn.
Whatever. Let's go solve some crimes, eh, boys? How about we stop at the donut shop for a bite first?
Oh, yeah.
Let's go to donuts.
Sprinkles on
them. I'm for it.
Yeah, that was the Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe. We've gotten a few new tapes recently, so we'll be playing some more of those little segments. And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Phone lines are open if you have any comments to make, or announcements, thoughts, reflections, objections, you name it. Phone number here is 423-5361. And we have one announcement that just brought to me in the studio that tomorrow, Monday the 22nd at 6:30 in the evening, the Beach Flats Working Group, and I could have the name wrong, we weren't entirely sure, but one of the groups concerned with the attempted giveaway of the Beach Flats to the Seaside Company by our progressive City Council Rutkin majority, they'll be meeting at 6:30 tomorrow night in the India Joe's building. That's right across from the Java House downtown. Not quite at India Joe's restaurant, but at one of the little neighboring offices. You'll be able to find it if you go down there at 6:30 tomorrow. For all you folks who've been following my show for stuff on the Beach Flats, we have been doing lots of interviewing around that, at least we did a couple weeks ago, and the issue is still a very important one, whether hundreds of people are going to be, well, several, let's not say hundreds, is it hundreds? It's somewhere between, actually it may well be hundreds of people denied housing, driven out of housing, many housing units destroyed in order to provide more commercial space for Charlie Canfield Seaside Company and a planned redevelopment down in the Beach Flats area. Really significant and important development in Santa Cruz, being opposed by many people, but of course being put on the fast track by our city council. That's at 6:30 tomorrow, Monday. Go down to India Joe's restaurant and you'll find the meeting of the Beach Flats group, the critics concerned with making sure there's a real public process there. Now, I have been on a trip lately, and I don't mean a mescaline trip, though that would have been nice. I've been traveling around the Southwest and around the south of California on the coast. One of the places I passed through was Flagstaff, Arizona. which when I was there 30 or 40 years ago, it was a very conservative place. It still has a kind of an untouched quality. It's about the same size as Santa Cruz, 7,000 feet high, a beautiful, largest city in northern Arizona. There were a lot of rainbow people in town, a lot of tie-dye folks, and I interviewed one of them. Apparently there's a rainbow gathering happening near Flagstaff, beginning, I believe, on July 1st. And here's a conversation about that. Unfortunately, the tape became unintelligible at a certain point because of a defect in the machine, which I returned to the drugstore from which I'd bought it. But part of it was intelligible, and I'll play that section for you. Interview from Flagstaff, Arizona, about a week ago.
So it's about noon on Friday the 12th, and we're here in, what's this park, Bobby?
Wheeler Park in Flagstaff, Arizona.
And Bobby, you've been here about a week. And
about a week.
Got your juggling implements with you here.
Yes.
How's Flagstaff treating you?
Okay, I've been checked out by the police twice. Now, the first time the police checked me out, the policeman told me for a fact, we would like to see some identification, but if you do not want to speak with us and if you do not want to show us identification, you do not have to.
That's fine.
And I went ahead and showed them my ID, and they were very polite about it. And seeing as I have no wants or warrants or anything, they gave me information about where I could juggle and where I couldn't juggle.
What were the rules on juggling for Flagstaff?
As long as I'm not blocking the sidewalk, as long as if I'm in front of a business and the owners of the business come out and ask me to move, I would be required to move. As far as street performing, they don't require any type of a permit, but as far as sales, you can pick up a $12 permit at the city hall for trinket sales or for handicraft sales.
So, where did you come from before this?
I started off in Eugene, and last year, April of last year, and in 15 months, I've done 6,000 miles by bicycle and trailer, traveling down the West Coast and across the United States. I've had great experiences with people along the way. I've had very few problems with any of the local authorities or even the state authorities wherever I go. The one time I was riding illegally on a freeway up in Northern California, the police officer was very polite about it and spent almost an hour mapping out a route that I could take to get me down to San Francisco. And that was a California Highway Patrolman.
Now, is this a new experience for you in terms of this kind of treatment from authorities, both local and state? Like, have you had done this kind of road stuff before?
I've been hitchhiking and traveling traveling different ways for several years. And what it is I think it's my attitude when the policemen stop me. My attitude is that they're there to help me. And if they don't get any bad biorhythm feedbacks from me, if they don't see me tense up, they don't tense up. Out of all the policemen that have stopped me, I think I've had bad incidents with maybe one out of 20 of them.
What about sleeping here in Flagstaff? Is it legal to sleep in public places?
It's illegal to camp inside the city limits, but once you get outside the city limits, it's almost limitless camping because you're right in the national forest immediately as soon as you get out of the city limits. And I ride my bike 5 miles up 180 and camp legally. I don't know what it's like for the rest of the people here, but from what I hear, it's illegal to camp inside the city limits.
Now, we're in Wheeler Park here. Is this park open at night or just during the day?
I'm not sure. I'm normally gone by nightfall anyway because I don't like to ride my bicycle at night.
Yeah, it closes at 10 p.m. and then reopens at 5 a.m.
Is this your first time in Flagstaff?
No, I've been in Flagstaff. First time in Flagstaff was in 1969 when I was hitchhiking across the country when I was a young man. And at the time I was fresh and bold and argued with a policeman and ended up in jail for 4 days.
So here in Flagstaff?
Yes, this was a long time ago. And since then, several times that I've been in Flagstaff. The times that I've been interviewed by the police officers has been very, very calm, collected. I don't argue with authority figures anymore. If they say I have to leave, I leave.
That's because you are the authority figure. Right?
Well, I am the only person that can govern myself. I'm a self-governing person. If I believe that I'm doing right, I will stand up for my rights. But there are times to stand up for your rights and there are times not to, and the time not to is when a policeman has a gun in his holster.
Which is, of course, at all times.
Is at all times. Except when you run into Sheriff Joe Williams, who is the sheriff of Coconino County here. Sheriff Joe Williams does not carry a gun, does not wear a badge, does not wear a uniform.
But he does wear clothes, unlike some people in Brooklyn.
Yeah. And I met him 4 years ago, and he's one of the most fundamental sheriffs around. In fact, he belongs to a fundamentalist church. Because of the rainbow gathering in the area, he's already called the governor and told the governor not to call the National Guard out on the rainbow gathering.
This looks like a menacing group around you. I mean, look at these dangerous hats and very subversive pants.
The sheriff told the governor that he would be more afraid of the National Guard coming in with armed weapons than he would with the rainbow being coming in with loaded pipes. And he told the governor, Sheriff Joe Williams did, that if the rainbow was going to be held in Coconino County, that he did not want the National Guard, and if the rainbow was going to be held anywhere else in the state, that he advised the governor not to call out the National Guard, because all it would do would be to cost the citizens of Arizona several million dollars that they could not afford.
So what's the update on the rainbow gathering? Do we have any interested or knowledgeable people who are?
I know exactly where it's going to be. It's going to be north of Holbrook, Arizona, about 40 miles up on Highway 77, and then there's a couple of side turns and forest roads that you have to go on to get to it. But it's north of Holbrook, Arizona on Highway 40. Holbrook is 100 miles east of Flagstaff, approximately.
What are the dates of the festival?
The official dates are July 1st through July 7th. But you can come early and help us set up. You can come late and help us clean up. I'm going to do both. There's a lot of work involved. We've got to hook up water systems. We've got to hook up sanitation systems. We've got to make sure that any fire pits that are built are legal and safe. For the forest, this is a very dry area. We don't want a wildfire like we had up in Wyoming.
That was some years ago?
That was 4 years
ago. And at about this point, the tape recorder began to give out. There was some rather interesting dialogue that followed. That's good information on the Rainbow Gathering, for those of you who don't know where it is. North of Holbrook, Arizona. Officially starting on the 1st, but show up early and help set up if you're into that. And if you're not, stay here and defend Free Radio Santa Cruz. Free Radio Santa Cruz, as I've said earlier in the show, facing real challenges. The Berkeley station, kind of the star station, the one of the first stations, has closed down. Not necessarily permanently. They're weighing their options, but they are under injunction. In a surprise decision by Claudia Wilkin last week, San Francisco Liberation Radio, second flagship station, is also closed down, partially possibly because of vacation of one of the people whose home the station has been situated, but also because of some concerns about the legal ramifications. And who knows, Free Radio itself may for a time be forced to close down if it's relocating. It may be forced to close down to gather more community support. This station needs your support in order to stay on the air. This program needs your support. And to support Free Radio, give a call to 427-4523. You don't have to give money. You don't have to give thousands of dollars. All you have to do, however, is you can provide all kinds of different things. We need furniture. We need we need items to sell at flea markets. We need legal support. We need simply knowing that you're out there and are willing to help, again, give a call to 427-4523 or drop a line to Post Office Box 7507 Santa Cruz, 95061. And if you have an interest in this show, give me a call off-air to Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom or HUF at 423-4833. Let me know if you want to help. We're interested in getting, well, testimony, for example, for the group going around gathering information about human rights violations, which we hope to bring before the United Nations through groups like the Kensington Welfare Rights Union, which is meeting today with Food Not Bombs and other groups in San Jose at 5:30. And I'll be going over to San Jose today. I'll be showing up at the town clock around 4:30. But don't know how much room I'm going to have in my car. I've already got one space filled, and there's a total, I think, of four spaces in that car. So if you got a car, you might want to rendezvous with me at the town clock. And looks like the rendezvous that had to happen is here. That pirate pussy is here, as she puts it. The notorious and well-apportioned Reckless has arrived. As well as, like, apparently, do I see a phone call? No, I thought I did. Yes, I do see a phone call. Okay. Reckless, I'm going to take this call, and I'm going to put on a little music.
Hi, you're on the radio with Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I will now read to you all 14 pages of the City Council agenda.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, 14 pages seems to me like they're up to a lot of business, so I would say people check it out and be there.
All right, well, maybe you can do a report later sometime the next day or two.
Okay.
Thanks.
Sure.
Thanks a lot, Dave. We got Reckless' show, and I'll
go Reckless.
All right.
Yes, kick ass.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, they're putting up condos all over town. Acres of condos bringing me down. Tiny little condos, no parking, no pool. The condos are empty, the shelters are full. Oh, let's squat condos.